Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by SDR Pods. Learn how we can build you a fully equipped sales development team to execute on personalized multi-channel prospecting and book you more meetings at the link below.
Welcome to another live episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by an old friend of mine from the startup community. I've known Dave for longer than I've been here at Predictable Revenue, back in my old Voltage CRM days. So Dave Kennett, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Colin. Great to be paired back up. Thanks for having me.
Of course, man. So we got reconnected. We got back in touch when you heard us talking about call scoring and the importance of it. And I think one thing that's been on my mind a lot lately is we've been, Aaron and I really talked about the new sort of predictable revenue formula. And we're trying to basically reframing how people think about predictable revenue and what the sort of key elements are. And because what we noticed was a lot of people trying to build outbound teams or even just revenue generating teams, and they struggle and they fall down and they say, oh, well, it doesn't work. And I think so much of that failure comes from uncertainty. And I think uncertainty creates fear, creates bad decisions, creates a lack of results. And so with the whole idea with publishing the formula and saying, here's what we've learned, here's how we think about it when we're diagnosing issues and when we're talking to clients, and even consulting, like we're unveiling some of the like secret sauce of predictable revenue. But we wanted to basically put that out there so that everybody could see how all these things connected. I see so many companies that are doing really, really well at booking a ton of meetings. And then you look at their AEs and their A's are just treating them like inbound and the deals disappear off the face of the earth. And right. I think I was going on a bit of a rant about this in one of our podcasts or something, and Dave saw it and said, hey, this is exactly what we do. And it triggered the, we haven't talked to Dave in a long time. And so I'm super excited to have you on the show. You're the founder, CEO over at Replays. Tell me a little bit about what Replays does, and then we'll talk a little bit about why you're here and how you can help the audience.
Absolutely. So we see the same thing you're seeing, where it's super important to have a structured, repeatable process. And with that, it brings predictability. And we can't measure things if we don't have data attached to it. And so what we've done is we've watched hundreds and hundreds, I guess thousands, of discovery calls and demos and closing calls over the course of the last year and a half. We've got a team of distributed course coaches who are senior leaders in well-known tech brands who review these, and we have access to all the rep data of our customers. So we've correlated what are the best sales reps doing right across the sales process, specifically the initial meeting is what we're talking about here, right? And you know, what does that process look like? What are the folks that are at the top of the leaderboard consistently doing? So that's where we formulated our 100 best practices. And you know, so many companies just don't have time to call coach. I mean, I didn't when I was a sales leader. I was probably putting through so many initiatives that I didn't give my team enough time to call coach. And so what we do is we take that off their hands. We're one of the first in the world that actually provide on-demand call coaching with amazing coaches. And we provide our 100 best practices where we will, for example, listen to an initial meeting that was outbound generated, and we'll look at the nuances that are super important and how you treat that differently than an inbound. And we'll provide video coaching as well as live one-on-one via Zoom. It's all remote. That's us in a nutshell. We do call reviews every 3 weeks for companies that unfortunately aren't getting around to call reviews more than once every quarter for their reps.
I'll be honest. I was totally blind to the importance of this. You know, I'd done some call reviews, some call coaching before, but generally just for new hires. And one of the things that I'm excited to talk about is you got like a 101 point plan of like, these are the elements that we look at for each of the calls. And then sort of one common sort of attitude that I see, I think we both see in so many startups that can just absolutely murder the return on investment of your sales team. And we'll talk a little bit about that later. But my journey into call coaching, it was something that was only for new reps. It was just for, you know, I'd have my boss, you know, I would shadow me, or my boss would shadow me, or I would shadow a new hire when I first started, and it's something that I would do as part of the onboarding, but never would do as part of the sort of that continuing education. And it wasn't until I came face to face with a company called Bregal Sagemon, and they really kind of kicked us in the butt and said, this is absolutely something that needs to be happening. And they had sort of taken Aaron's initial sort of predictable revenue formula and added a couple elements of their own. And one of those elements that they had basically inspired in all of their portfolio companies was the element of call coaching. And what came, like how it came up, is I was looking at all of our customers and I saw this little group of customers that I couldn't understand why they were getting better results than all of our other customers. And so when I dug into it, because it wasn't just like better, you know, meeting booking rates and better response rates. When I was looking at, because we actually have our team sort of look at like how much pipeline, how many closed deals, there's like a group of five custom companies and they were all like crushing it. I'm like, okay, yeah. Well, like what's going on here? How do I solve this and how do I replicate this? And when I looked and when I took the, like, so I could see the names, I could see that they were all Sagemon companies. This is an ad for Sagemon. They're not a sponsor. I know the team over there fairly well. But I started digging in with Cole Fox. You might remember him from Lead IQ. He's now over at Sagemon, and Brian Wilson, who's one of the worldwide best reps at Cintas back in the day. And when we were really starting to dig in, one of the key elements was relentless follow-up. And they did in like perfect calls is what they called it. And yeah, they had their like sort of 7-point system. And they not only did they enforce it, but they scored it on a regular basis and they would do randomized scoring. And I remember talking to the two guys, we almost got into this business to help scale this up. Because they were these are guys that know the best practices, that understand how important it is and have seen how critical it is, and then didn't have time for it. Because as a sales manager, there's just so many things to do. The sales manager is sort of like this weird title that we give, and you think you're going to be managing people, but you're actually managing people, technology, a process. You're trying to, you know, do a little bit of the product management element and trying to. So there's so many things that fall on the plate of a sales manager just in the name of getting a deal done, that I don't put the blame on anybody for not, you know, actually getting a chance to do it. And I'm super excited that you guys are helping. I'll stop plugging replays for a minute because it was when I found out you were doing this, I was super, super excited. And I try and keep these episodes to a little bit less promotional.
Yeah, let's leave. I'm totally aligned with that. Let's leave the group listening with a ton of practical tactics they can use in that next call.
For sure. So when you think about, I think that's a little, I've gone through the rant about why call coaching, and I think we're probably all on the same page that this is something that we want to do. So talk to me about how do we do this well? You've said 3 weeks is sort of the right cadence.
Yeah, we think so. We've certainly experimented with, is it every week? Is it every 4 or 5 weeks? And you don't want to leave it too long or else there isn't A, accountability, B, muscle memory generated. And we use this analogy all the time with our customers, like, you know, Vidyard, Outreach, IBM. It's like going to the driving range. And if you meet a golf coach and you're a golfer and you want to fine tune your swing, you know, that half hour you spend hitting balls with a golf coach, you might fine tune something there. But the chance of just going to make meaningful, lasting impact on your swing 3 months, 6 months down the road, probably not that great. But if that same golf coach followed you around the golf course every 3 weeks for a couple few months, you better bet that you would be improving the muscle memory of your game. And it's not dissimilar for sales reps. It just doesn't cut it to do an ad hoc call coach once a quarter, because as a leader, you forget what you asked them to do last time. And as the rep, you don't feel accountable to go work on all this stuff because there's no one calling you to it in a few weeks. And hey, don't get me wrong. If there are folks listening out here who do it weekly, good on you. And that's great. If you have the time to do that as sales leaders, I think that's a fantastic investment in time. When you look at the investment that all of these tech companies have in sales headcount, and you look at that as a percentage of your total cost, it's significant. And then you look at the budget, the targets that they're meant to bring in. So to invest a little bit of time to fine tune that, I think A, we owe it to reps to help bring them up. And I think that's partly what they sign on for. And B, it's just good business sense to do it. And I think finally, I just, on all your comments before, I just want to comment on Cintas. I've worked with a few folks from Cintas, and man, they're some of the best sales process folks I know. And so I know I'm talking about tech and SaaS because most of our customers are tech and SaaS, but process is process regardless of where you're selling and who you're selling to. And yeah, I definitely love to give a shout out to Cintas. They've done a great job.
Mm. This episode brought to you by Cintas.
Yeah, I guess so, right?
For all your overalls and floor mat needs.
Right.
Cool. And so I totally agree. I mean, it's something that's so hard to do on a regular basis. You know, big shout out to Julian on our team, who's actually doing this on a weekly basis, with all of our reps, even our SDRs, which is super helpful. And I know, our SDR team at Predictable Revenue, both in Vancouver and Canada and Mexico, are all doing call coaching. We've actually spun up and started doing like peer call coaching, because there were just so many of them and it was really hard to scale up and sort of managerially.
So now
if we're all agreed that, hey, this is something that we should do, and we probably want to be doing it somewhere between the cadence of like weekly to every 3 weeks, what calls should we be reviewing?
Well, I think it's important to be consistent in the calls you're reviewing. And by that, I mean call stage. So one of the best practices we have, where we just see amazing results with our customers, is let's say we start working with a tech sales team and they say, hey, we just want to move our deals through stages quicker. We seem to get ghosted after discovery.
No.
Yeah, no, never heard that before. Right?
No, that's so far out.
Yeah. You know, it happens to all of us. And but there are very clear, precise tactics we see the best sales reps in the market using consistently to help ensure there's a solid discovery where pain is understood, impact of pain, consequence of pain, as well as quantifying it. And then being able to really truly capture their attention and get to the next meeting. But there's also things like getting that next meeting on the books, etc. So what we do is, instead of just starting to, you know, if you're a sales leader listening to this and you're like, okay, where should I start with my call coaching or how should I expand it? I would recommend, instead of, let's say you're not a transactional team, because a lot of transactional teams will have their discovery and their demo all in one motion, as you know, 30 mm-hmm. to 45 calls. And if so, just listen to those calls. If you're an enterprise fit or strategic fit business and you've got multiple touch points through stages, listen to the discovery, give feedback, and then give the rep a few key things to work on. Not too much. We don't want to overwhelm them, right? And want it to be a positive process. And then say, hey, we're going to review another discovery in a couple of weeks. As opposed to, hey, I'm going to review this person's discovery, and then next I'm going to do a demo, and then listen to their demo, and next I'm going to listen to a proposal or closing call. It doesn't build that accountability. Again, using the golf analogy, it's like you don't just give someone a tip on how to use their driver and then say, okay, let's go to the putting green. It's like, okay, let's see you deploy this tip that I just talked to you about with your driver.
Mm-hmm. And I think to further that analogy, I love that you're starting with the discovery, because if you're golfing, and I'm not an exceptional golfer, so maybe this is not great golf advice, but if we're trying to golf and we're at like a regular, I don't know, par 3, 5, whatever the sort of standard is a few hundred yards out. If I can only drive the ball 30 meters or 30 yards, like, that's what we're going to work on first. Cause if I can't get anywhere close to the green with my drive, there's no sense working on my short game until I can actually get within a realm within that sort of, I guess, chipping distance. Right. And it's the same with the discovery. I think there's no point in working on your closing calls if you're absolutely botching all of your discovery calls, because if you fix that leak at the top of the funnel where you're botching all your discovery calls, you're going to have so much more volume to work with downstream. So I love that. Yeah. It seems like you're starting with that sort of that first call in the process.
Yeah, we highly recommend that. I mean, a customer will sometimes come to us and say, listen, we feel like our demo sucks. It's just not resonating with prospects. Please help us there. And sure, we'll start there. But we get asked all the time, what do you think the most important stage is in sales? We firmly believe that replays, it's the discovery. You know, if that's done well, you're set up for success the whole way through. If it's not done well, good luck trying to really address any indifference or competitive depositioning down the road.
I totally agree. I think you can feel, if you've done a really strong discovery, you can tell almost at the end, if like, or even just in the small talk at the beginning of the next call, if the sale is going to close, right? Like you get to that sort of stage. It's like, oh yeah, I've done such a good demo or such a good discovery, that like we're in a really good spot here. And And I would argue, like, if your demos are, if you're really falling down, there's a good chance it's a symptom of a really crappy discovery because you didn't hit on the right things. You're talking about the wrong things.
Agreed.
But again, this is supposed to be your podcast, not mine. So remind me to shut the hell up.
Those are all really good points.
So we start at the start of the discovery call. So what are some things that people get wrong at the discovery call step? And I guess we can just sort of work our way through, or maybe should we start before the discovery? Is there something that's sort of like a pre-discovery kind of research step?
Yeah, let's. I mean, I think if I were to bucket it, I would start at pre-call planning, then I'd go to the beginning of the call, and then I'd go to discovery. And pre-call planning, of course, so important to, there's no worse look than jumping on a call. And the first question you ask is, where are you based? I mean, as a prospect, I would feel like you didn't even look at my LinkedIn to see where I'm based, yeah. Right? And I know this is table stakes for most of the folks listening. So at Replays, we've got our 100 best practices. We've got single diamond, double and triple diamond. The single diamond are the table stakes. Like if you're a new seller, okay, sure, you might not have heard this, but it's the double and triple diamond that I'll spend most of my time on. But pre-call planning, making sure you're looking at the airwaves on the news, going through any Google alerts for that company, looking at the website, looking at who you're connected to there, digging into the CRM. Jumping in with a hypothesis of need, you might not know exactly what it is they're looking for, and you don't want to assume. Have a hypothesis so you can at least start gauging in your discovery different buckets where you might be able to help them. If it was SDR generated, ensuring that you've got all the relevant notes from them and that you're demonstrating that to them. So, you know, those are some of the highlights we recommend in the pre-call piece.
Hmm. Yeah, the where are you from? Just it's such a lazy move.
It is.
I've been guilty of it so many times as well.
Yeah, I know I've done it before too. And you know, we all have, right? We've all done it. But, it, you know, the good thing is if we follow a process is process for a reason. So if you first buy into and agree on the process, then you know that if you follow it, you'll be okay. Mm-hmm. So I guess the next is beginning of the call. We see a lot of people, unfortunately, not messing this up. And it's important to build rapport at the beginning. And a lot of people feel very uncomfortable about that. I'll hear a rep will tell our coaches, hey, I'm not, I just read the challenger sale, let's say, and I'm not a relational seller. I'm a challenger seller. So I don't need to build rapport. And what they're missing is that we're humans selling to humans. And that that connection, the tribal connection of, hey, where are you from? Oh, I've been there, and da, 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 is important. However, we also both know, because we've been around the block, that some people hate that. And you'll talk to a prospect, they don't want to talk about their weekend or the weather or anything else. They just want to get into it. Well, it's our job as sales professionals to pick up very quickly on that cue. And so anyone listening right now who wants to get better at that, I recommend DISC profiling. I don't know if you've done DISC profiling before, but super interesting. It categorizes people into four different colors. And the colors are based on what their natural preference is. So if they're naturally relational, then we want to maybe expand the, I'm talking about the prospect. If we read them as naturally relational, we might expand the building rapport. If they're a direct driver, they just want to get the facts, then we just dive right in. So, you know, build rapport, do introductions, right? I see that skipped a lot. Mm-hmm. So people will go from rapport to agenda before really going around the room. And the overarching North Star we have for this is treat these remote calls, because we've been coaching remote calls for a long time, and we've been doing it way before COVID. If in doubt, we encourage people to think, would I do this in a live environment in a boardroom, right? And that is, of course, we would go around the room and do introductions. But that gets missed a lot of the time. And I think it's important for people to say, not like if I've got my team with me, I'll typically, instead of speaking for them, let's let them build connection with the folks we're talking to and go around and say what they do and who they are. So introductions and then an agenda, of course, you know, everyone knows that. Yeah, you build a roadmap for the call, but we don't see it done all the time. And we even see seasoned sellers who miss this. And it's just a respectful thing, which is, hey, you know, when you look at the most valuable asset we as humans have, it's probably time, right? And so the fact that this person has shared their time with us as a prospect, it's only fair to explain how we plan to propose to spend it and then get their two cents on it so we can make the most of it.
Question for you. It's sort of unplanned. When you go around those intros, what are your thoughts on like asking them for like what they're hoping to get out of the call or some sort of prompt with like, you know, what are you hoping to learn today or Like, is that a regular thing? Is that a something you advise to do or not to do?
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good idea because, you know, when you've got, and by the way, when you said this question wasn't planned, I want everyone that's listening to know that I have no idea what questions you're asking me today. You're talking about your planned questions, but I didn't know any of them, right? And that's the way I prefer it, off the cuff, right? But the, I think that's a fantastic idea. You got to do it though, in a way that you'd be prepared for someone taking you off a trajectory, mm-hmm. right? So where we see that going sideways is if as the account executive and the moderator of the call, I say, all right, let's just quickly go around to introduction. I'd love to hear, you know, what each of you want to get out of this. And then one person starts going down a path and then they start asking you a question. Before you know it, you're actually in the call and you're now in a position where you're doing discovery and you haven't even set the agenda. So just that's a quick caution that it might be better to do introductions and then say, you know, we're going to do an agenda in a minute. Then we're actually going to go around to see what each of you want to get out of this. Or you could say, you know, I'm just going to kick off with a quick agenda, but I'd love to then go around the room and do introductions and hear what you want to get out of it. That's another way to do it. So that way you're able to then just dive right into the call if you want.
Totally. Full on like Vancouver moment here. Dave and I are both in Vancouver. Do you know Howard Olson here in Vancouver? So he did some early in the days when we were doing call coaching, he was actually helping us. I met Howard back in the Launch Academy days through somebody did a session. And anyway, really strong coach here in Vancouver. And his thing was always catch and release. If somebody's asking you, trying to take you, like you're in your agenda and they're like, hey, tell me what you do. Or, hey, tell me this. It's like, hey, that's a great question. I'll get to it. Do you mind if I, and then you ask their permission to ask, to sort of stick to your agenda, ask, hey, do you mind if I ask you a couple of questions first? I love that piece. And I always got to call it out that like it's one of the things I struggled with the most. And it's exactly what you're talking about is you're going around and somebody's like on a different agenda and they just want to dominate. And I found this such a helpful tactic to like pull it back and politely regain control over the meeting.
I love that. And right there, you underpin the importance of a process. You've got a process of getting yourself unstuck in that situation every single time. And so it's not talk tracks that are important, although it's good to have a few, but it's a process that what you follow those steps and it'll get you out, right? So I love that he taught that. And I think that's super valuable to help get people on track. Mm-hmm.
So we're in the beginning of the call. We've talked about the agenda. We're getting people to introduce themselves. Now we're going to set the agenda. So what does a good agenda look like? Do you stand up and be like, okay, well, it's going to have a start, a middle, and an end, and then I'm going to ask you for a credit card number? Or do you have a preferred way of setting the agenda?
Yeah, I think we joked about the credit card number, but let's talk about that too. In transactional sales, I get that question all the time. The question we get from emerging market reps who are handling, you know, let's say $4,000 to $6,000 ACV deals is, should I set the agenda and at the end of the call, we're going to be in a place where you can make a decision. I'd like to know if you're going to move forward. So, by the way, I don't recommend you do that. But what I do recommend people do in that scenario is say, my goal at the end of the call is to make sure you've got all the information you need to then go and make the decision. Because that way we're not getting them on their back foot right off the bat, right? Mm-hmm. We can do the trial close at the end still. But it's all about making the prospect feel how we want to make them feel. We don't want them to make them feel pressure sold right in the first 5 minutes of the discussion. So that's my thoughts on that. But on the agenda, yeah, I mean, really three steps: propose a roadmap and state the value and check for acceptance. Those three things. And it should never be more than, you know, a lot of people talk about, I think, shy away from agenda because they think it's this weird formal thing. They picture people in suits and briefcases in the 1980s, right, pitching an agenda. It's not what this is, right? It's, you know, really can't wait to ask you a few questions about your business, and that'll help me further tailor the demo that we're going to do later. I don't want to just give you the standard demo we give everyone. I want to make the most of your time. So I'll ask you a few questions, and then we'll dive into things that are specifically interesting to you. You know, how does that sound? So here, it was very casual. It was here, just a framework for the call, what they can expect, a little bit of questions. I stated the value. Here's why I'm asking, so that we can actually key into if there's five things that we sell and you're only interested in two, I'm not going to bore you with the other three. And then we check for acceptance. Like, hey, how does that sound? If they're like, good, then I follow that. I would recommend following that up still with, okay, great. Now, was there anything specific, you know, that when you came into this call, was there anything specific that really caught your attention that you wanted to key into? And then we go on from there.
Pause. If you're listening to this call and you don't have like an agenda or a, you know, a process for how you open up every single call, if all you did this week, this month to improve your sales process, to improve your sales game, is just stop listening right now and go back and listen to that first sort of 20 minutes, even that last 10 minutes of what Dave was just talking about, this is gonna like 5X your results. If you're not doing this, it's incredible the amount of value that you lose at the beginning of the call because you're sloppy and you're all over the place. This one single thing is quite possibly to the top of the funnel, so it's gonna have downstream effects. I just want to highlight that, Dave. Super, super awesome, awesome advice. I love that.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, things end how they start, right? And if they start messy, chances are that not only is it going to make a bad impression, but it's going to be a little bit chaotic all the way through.
Totally. So we've opened the call, we set the agenda, we got their confirmation of, you know, is that what you're hoping to talk about? Is there anything else that is on the agenda? You know, let's say we get a couple of things. So now we're into the top of our discovery call agenda. So what does that look like?
Yeah, the next two things we see the best sales reps doing consistently is absolutely doing a quick level set on what the SDR, if it was an outbound motion lead that was passed, what the SDR learned and what they passed on. We don't want the person feeling like they have to tell us twice. We want to demonstrate that we respect their time. We took the time to listen to what the SDR said. And in that vein, I wouldn't just read the SDR's notes, right? I would jump on a call with them more than just 30 seconds before, because there might be something interesting that the SDR found that you want to do a bit of research on or plan on your call. So, and I get how this goes, right? We're all flying a million miles an hour. It's super easy to just be like to the SDR, hey, let's just have a quick 2-minute chat before this thing goes on. Or you're actually sitting there in the Zoom room waiting for them to come in. We all know that's not best practice. And so doing a level set there and saying, you know, is that a fair assessment of what I heard of, you know, what the SDR told me? Is that a fair assessment? And, you know, half the time they'll say, yep, that's great. The other half, they'll just start elaborating right there and then on things that start to become nuggets, and boom, you know, you dive into your discovery. But if they go, that makes sense, then I'd say, great. Before we dive in with a few questions, I'd just love to know, like, how much do you even know about our organization? And that part's super important, and we see it skipped a lot. And it's important because what if they do have a frame of reference and we don't even know about it because we didn't ask? Like, oh yeah, I know someone in the industry and they've been using you for years. It's like, oh great, what customer is that? You might know them, you might be able to quickly look them up in the CRM, or you might be able to leverage some of those stories, whatever it is. And if it's zero they know about you, I think it's important to do just a quick 30 second to 60 second level set on, here's what we do as an organization. And where we see reps fall down here is they either don't say anything about it, and then what happens at the end of that call if you don't ask any of this? Because this one's controversial. A lot of people out there will say, no, you're wasting time, just get to pain and then, you know, talk about what you can provide. But there's a credibility aspect there, right? Like, Colin, if you called me out of the blue and we started talking, if I didn't know anything about predictable revenue, I might ask you at the end, hey, tell me more about your organization, right? But if you level set at the beginning and you talk about the foundation of predictable revenue and Aaron Ross and his thought process, there's a whole lot of street cred that's now going to happen for the whole rest of the call that you wouldn't have otherwise had. So you're starting to tick off little boxes in their mind, like, okay, street cred, got it, good. But the second thing we recommend is, you know, don't take more than 30 to 60 seconds. You don't need it. They don't care. And it's not relevant.
Totally agree. It's that social proof, right? Like, if you're listening, I want you to just pause for a second and think the last time that you're in a conversation where you're thinking, this person is not, like, you're not quite sure if this person is full of crap or if they're a genius. And it's so hard to triangulate, right? Maybe it was a podcast you're listening. Maybe it was this podcast. And you're like, who is this Colin guy? Why the hell should I listen to him? I've had these calls I've listened to these podcasts where I'm like, you don't have that context. And then you get to the end and it's like, oh yeah, I was employee number one at Google. And you're like, oh, okay. That changes the weight that I put on every single thing they said versus like, oh, it's just some startup intern, right? If it was the first person to join Google versus the last person to join Google, it's a very, very different context. And so your conversation carries so much more weight when you add in the sort of social credibility at the top of the call.
It really does. Your champion, you're wanting to make this person a champion, most likely. And they're going to stick their neck out for you, hopefully. And they're going to do that if you've proven to them that your organization is worthy of it and that your solution is worthy of it. So that's our best practice there. And then from there, it's
just before you jump in, I gotta ask, because I hear this so much. Is this, when you say level set, is this your elevator pitch? Is this talking about your company? You know, what is that 30 to 60 seconds?
Right. Okay. Well, there's two things. There's a level set in terms of, hey, here's what the SDR, I understand the SDR said. So I was using it in that context, but quite right. I hear it all the time of level set in terms of here's our company and what we do. So the key points that we recommend you talk about there are anything that you think is going to be interesting to them. That's going to help give them more confidence rather than less as to working with you versus a competitor. And so if you know, a lot of startups, so there might be a bunch of people listening saying, I'm a startup. I hardly got any street cred. I don't have much here. Well, okay. Then you need to be a little bit scrappier about how you go about that. And it might be about that one customer that you do have and not calling out that it's one customer, but saying, you know, what our customers find with us is da, 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 da. And then as we get more evolved in late stage, we're able to then leverage brands, the number of people in our company. Maybe you share revenue figures, maybe not. Maybe you share growth figures, maybe you share geographic dispersion. You know, we're all over North America, we're all over the world, we've grown from this to this. Whatever, you know, just put yourself, I would say the answer there is for people thinking about what their elevator pitch, not even elevator pitch, just their about us should be. Mm-hmm. It should be, what would you want to hear? But what we recommend, here's a hack actually, that is super, super impactful and hardly anyone does it. Always start with the pain you're solving, right? People think how many employees and how many customers and our revenue, but really they don't care about that as much. It's so if I were to kind of role play it here, I'll tell you how we would do it. If you ask me about replays, I would say, you know, the problem.
Oh, hang on, I lost you, Dave.
Oh, okay.
There you go. I think you're back now. I just heard I'm assuming you're going to say problem. So let's start that piece again.
Okay, great. Yeah. So if you know, we recommend following a structure like this, starting with the problem you solve, right? So if it were replays doing an about us, say 7 or 8 minutes into a call with a prospect, I'd say, how much do you know about us? Oh, not that much. Okay, great. Well, you know, what we're really looking to solve is the fact that call reviews don't typically get done in a meaningful way and very frequently, right? The average rep, best practice out there is to do a call review every 2-3 weeks. And the average rep out there is getting a call review every, you know, 3 to 5 months. And that's not going to create lasting, meaningful change. And the other thing is, you look at tech, it's so high growth that there's a lot of new sales leaders that were just an individual contributor a year ago. And what are they coaching to? Well, they tend to shy away from it. So we provide our 100 best practices, which is a list of best practices based on. And then I go into what I said at the beginning of our conversation. And then I say, here's what we solve for. Here's a little bit about us. And I move on. So what I've done there, if we look at the actual process from the prospect's point of view, I now have a sense as to, oh, this is the problem they solve for. And I likely have one or two of those problems. So you've captured my interest. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I would have added, well, here are the brands that, you know, work with us, all of these different notable SaaS companies, et cetera. And so that gives the social proof and the street cred. And then I'm going to seed in key customer stories. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes. Like that's a game changer that most people aren't doing enough from what we see. But yeah, that's our process for that.
That's awesome. So Dave hasn't committed to this, but I'll tell you what, if you're listening and you want Dave to have a look at your opener, that sort of 1 minute, how you describe your company, send it to me, Colin with 2 L's at predictablerevenue.com, or get in touch with our marketing team and I'll personally homing pigeon carry it to Dave and get back to you. And I'll throw my two cents in there if you want it as well, and I can run it up with our rev team as well. But I think this is something that's so important that if you are not saying like the same thing on every call, you're just winging it. And like it's one thing that I don't see. You don't encounter too many sales organizations that have a consistent message across five reps. You ask five reps to describe the company, you're going to get five different answers. And this is such a big moment because you're setting the context for this is what we do. This is how we help people. And this is how you should think about the things that I'm going to tell you. What we're trying to do downstream in this call is open up the customer's mind to seeing like, here's your reality. And we want to raise their level of expectations. And so, and then you want to play on that. Like you see this gap. Well, now that you see that there's a gap there, I can solve that for you. And it all starts with describing the market pain or the pain that you will solve for them.
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. So we've level set, we've introduced the company. Now we're getting into discovery. Are we asking some questions yet?
Yeah, it's time to ask the questions. And so I think, you know, the overarching points here are, let's talk about what reps typically aren't doing. They're not doing enough discovery. And they're not doing deep enough discovery when they do it. And why is that? Well, the things we commonly hear are, I don't want them to feel like it's an interrogation. I don't want them to feel like they're on the stand, or I don't know how to keep it conversational, or I just feel like, you know, they're just going to be in a real hurry to get to the demo. Mm-hmm. And all of those things actually can be true, but they're usually outliers and they're usually mitigated by how you conduct your discovery. So yes, someone can feel like you're on the stand if you are asking questions like that. But that's where process comes in, right? We coach people with our replace process to make it conversational. We've got a few steps on how to do that. We've got joining sentences that are important to say partway through. If you sense, and this is why it's so important to have video on, by the way, we haven't even talked about that. The best reps consistently have their video on because you can see the other person and get the nuance of their nonverbal cues. There's a level of trust and credibility. I mean, look, I'm gonna take mine off for a sec. Mm-hmm. If it was like this the whole time, it would have been a different experience, right? And so there's something that chemically happens in the brain from a connection perspective when you can see people. But anyway, we recommend that you use connective sentences like, hey, I understand that there's a lot of questions here and I apologize. We're almost through, but I'm really just doing this to save you time in the end because I don't want you to see our whole standard pitch if really there's only 20% of it that really you're interested in hearing about today, right? So if you just say stuff like that, though, you know, they'll be okay. Let's deal with the one main one that I'm sure people are thinking right now. Like, this is all great on paper, right? They're probably thinking, well, Dave, that's all best case scenario, but what about, you know, like half the time when the prospect 5 minutes in says, yeah, I just want to see your price, right? We get, isn't that the age old thing? And so that one, I'm going to say people have to watch our masterclass together. I'm joking. Now, what people need to do,
for here's how payments of $49.80.
yeah, exactly. But I mean, how often does that happen? Right. I know I do it as a buyer all the time. I'm like, okay. I'm sure I get the demo part. Just how much does it cost? And we all know that until we actually allow the prospect to see the value, we can't effectively maximize our opportunity to close that deal and charge what we're asking to charge. And so how do we do that? How do we bridge that gap if 5 minutes in, they're just like, yeah, show me the pricing. So there's a few processes we recommend for that. One is to say, you know, I totally get that you're very interested in the pricing. I would be too. And we're definitely going to get to that. But it's super important for me to understand a little bit more about your business. So I can actually, like, our process is that we provide a recommended solution, you know, based on all these hundreds of customers that we board all the time. When I ask you these questions, I can come back to you with a recommendation and then we'll key the pricing to that. And Colin, that helps a lot of the time, not every time, right? Often the person will be like, yeah, that's fine. But I just want to get a sense as to what your pricing is. And that's where you can do one of two things. You can give them a range. And say, well, you know, let me give you an average range of price that we typically see. And I can't promise you it's going to be on the low end or high end of this because I need to learn more. The problem there is you might anchor them low. But at least, oh, hey, who we got there?
This is Neil.
Hey, how you doing, Neil?
Neil, here, say hi to Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Say into the mic. Hi, Dave.
Heidi.
There you go. And then this is Joe. He's very upset that he didn't get a hug.
Okay, go to Gaga. Ah, that's nice.
Sorry.
No worries.
Yeah, it's one of the joys of working from home, and the kids we have a nanny, so the kids are just on the other side of the door here, and they frequently break in. It is a little bit hectic when I'm recording, but it is probably the best part of my day.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I can relate to that. My daughter did that twice today, and I loved it. And this is a great, actually, let's come back to what we're talking about, but this is a really good one, because everyone listening gets what you just experienced, right? Because we've all gone through this pandemic or going through this pandemic. And there's definitely right and wrong ways to handle as a sales rep, though. Like the other day, one of our coaches watching a review, and they flagged it for me, because we got a ton of coaches, and they'll flag the interesting ones for us to share as a team and then pass along on things like this. And, you know, the prospect had a child run in, jump in her arms, and was there and talking, but the sales rep didn't say a thing. And it's one of those things where I understand that, because if it hasn't happened to you before as a sales rep, you might think, what's the right and wrong thing here?
Mm-hmm.
The overarching thing is we're just human, right? Like, to ignore the fact that that just happened is more artificial and weird than anything, right? It's
totally.
Just natural, and it's life, and it's being human. And so I think it probably goes without saying, but I thought worth mentioning that for people that are listening, and because as sales professionals, we're all encountering that every day right now.
100%. And like I will now, I mean, if we're going on this tangent, you know, like we're trying to build a relationship with these individuals. What more powerful, like, could you imagine, like, I cycle and I play hockey. My hockey gear is never going to run into the room and jump on me. So you'd be like, oh, you play hockey too. Right. But I guarantee every parent cares about their kids. Oh, I think we just lost the stream audio. One sec.
Sure.
Huh, that's strange. YouTube, let me know if you can, Mara, if you're in the chat there, let me know if it's, if you're still getting the audio. It's telling me that the bitrate is down.
Okay.
Oh, I think we're back.
Okay.
I think we're back. Anyway, I'm going to hit record here just in case.
Sure.
All good. All right. She says it's all good.
Awesome.
All right. Well, so
I know exactly where we were there. Do you want me to just finish that last part?
Let's jump back in.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. So if someone then, you know, they've asked about pricing and you've said, you know, you want to tailor the rest of it to their needs, it's important for them to see it, and they still say you want pricing, then you can say, well, here's the range. If that's not good enough, then hey, they're the prospect. Go ahead and show it to them. But I would say this first. I would say, when we look at the folks that were evaluating our solution over the last, you know, handful of months, I look at the ones that move forward,
evaluating.
Typically price wasn't the number one thing typically that they cared about. Typically it was, and they named three or four pain points and say, you know, I just love to understand, before we get into this pricing, where does pricing rank in relation to other priorities? For example, la, da, 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 da. And let's have them say it. And often they'll say, yeah, well, my boss just told me to go out and get a few quotes. And it's like, okay, great. Well, now, thank goodness, it's qualified our time, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, ultimately, we recommend two levels of resistance first. Not resistance, but explanations as to why we don't do it, and kind of give them something. And ultimately, if they ask for it, sure. But we want to qualify it first and understand what's driving.
Well, and I think resistance is totally the right word to use there, because it's not like you're saying no. I'm thinking like resistance, like the resistance bands at the gym. You gotta push on them, but if you push hard enough, you'll eventually get there. So yeah, I love that. So if I ask you for price, I'm like, we get on the call, I'm like, Dave, so this replays thing, how much is that?
I'd say we've got a range of prices, and it's really going to depend on the size of your sales org and how you've segmented your sales org. So I'd love to understand that a little bit better, if it's okay. Walk you through the different features we have, because we've got probably four or five different line items, and then I can actually tailor a solution to, let's keep this role play going. Actually. Mm-hmm. So I'll tailor it to that to you. How does that sound?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds good, but I'm trying to fit this in. Like, I just want to make sure it's going to make sense financially for me. Right. And like, I've got a couple reps. So can you tell me how much it costs?
Yeah, I absolutely. Before we do that, have you got a budget set out for this?
No budget. This is something net new.
Yeah, no, fair enough. So I'll give you a range per rep. And typically we recommend we start people on our quick start program. That's three reviews, or what we call credits per rep.
Mm.
And, you know, roughly we're looking at a per credit rate of about $800.
Gotcha. Okay. So you've got your sort of like, you're not pushing back. It's very gentle. It's sort of like a jiu-jitsu move. You're kind of using my energy against me. You're going to tell me eventually, but you're going to learn a little bit along the way.
Yeah, that's right. And then I naturally would have gone to the next. You would have answered that and said, well, okay, but is that like a discount per number of people? Da, da, da. And that's where I would have said, you know, I'd love to, happy to answer that. And I will, right? So I'm letting you know, I'm going to answer that. And I say, where does pricing rank for you? You know, typically when I look at the problems we solve for people that move forward with us, it's giving time back in the calendar of sales leaders, knowing that they have peace of mind that their win rate improvements typically going to go up 5-10% within a few months. For emerging markets folks, a little longer for obviously longer sales cycles. But they don't usually rank price number one because the ROI with us is amazing. Like I don't want to move forward with a single customer if there isn't significant ROI. But where does price rank with you relative to improving win rate and ensuring you've got a high average order size?
That's a really good way of like reframing things. You're not saying it, but you're reminding me of like sort of the total cost of ownership. And that if you're able to bump my win rates a couple of percent, that $800 per call is nothing.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Love it. Okay. So we've got through the pricing obstacle. I guess, how are you, and I apologize if I'm going back too far, but when we're looking at the discovery questions, do you have a sort of a framework for like, there's always a mixture of like uncovering pain. I find it's uncovering pain and qualifying to make sure they're a fit, and then sort of sharing elements to kind of build up that momentum. Especially, I find you need to pay more attention to it for an outbound deal, right? Like if it's inbound, there's tons of momentum. They're coming towards you. With outbound, they're sort of in this steady state. They may even be coming away from you where they're like, they're not really picking up on it. They're not really invested in the call. They're just sort of like, yeah, you can tell they haven't mentally bought into the call. So I'm curious, like, I guess first question is like, how do you balance those three elements? And then second question is like, how do you steer that initial discovery?
Yeah, that initial meeting for an outbound generated lead, you know, is special. It's got to have a specific call objective, not only for the prospect, but for you, and a secondary objective, because we all know these things take funny left turns out of nowhere all the time. So I think, you know, number one, you know, we've generated some level of curiosity to actually get that lead passed to an account executive for an initial meeting. So now I think the goal predominantly is to generate interest for the next call. And how do we do that? Well, I think A, we want to dive in and do some deeper discovery. We know that when we called them, that they weren't necessarily, usually, sitting there online looking for a solution like ours. They may not, and typically don't have a line item in the budget for it. And so to start off and say, what are your pains? Makes no sense. So you called me, right? But to start off by saying something along the lines of, you know, what we find with folks in your role, and we've got a number of companies that are in your industry, and our direct customers that reach out to us are in your seat, they're in your position, as let's say it's CMO. And what we found is they're really struggling with da 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 da. Does any of that resonate with you? Does any of that keep you up at night? And let's say you throw out three buckets. Typically, they'll be like, well, yeah, this bucket. Okay, and we understand that. And that's how we help. I'd love to dive into that a little bit more. And then what we want to do is a bit of discovery, but we want to leave that outbound generated lead, that person leaving the call, thinking back later after you hang up, man, I learned a lot from that person. I almost would have paid for that phone call. Mm-hmm. And we've all heard that before, and I love it. I think it's great. So how do we do that? It's by having good, relevant customer stories, educating them on industry benchmarks that they might not have been aware of. What does great look like? Maybe they haven't had a chance to go look at this other shiny thing. We get to talk to their peers in the industry all the time. They don't. So we are learning things that we can share with them. Maybe we're using internal industry benchmarks. So overarching is, ask the right questions to understand whether there's a need that could be identified. Generate enough interest by allowing them to see, oh, wow, there is a need here I didn't realize I potentially had. And educating them on, here's what the sunny state could look like. Mm-hmm. And we can take you there. And that's usually enough to get you to that next move.
Gotcha. And so I love you're starting with like the three pains of like, here's the sort of three buckets. confirm, do any of those resonate? Do any of those keep you up at night? And then you're sort of mixing in customer stories and a little bit of education. I'm assuming you're weaving in like some stats, and I guess it depends on the sale, but some customer stories and stats.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I do think it's important. Customer stories are so key, and most reps aren't using them. It's funny. You ask every rep, hey, are customer stories important? And I think almost all of them would say yes. Mm-hmm. Yet there's this dissonance that happens. We don't see it happening consistently when we initially have customers that whose calls we're reviewing. Everyone who we consistently review now does it, and it works. We've got a whole process for it. I won't go into today. It's called a customer story soundbite. It's all in under a minute. And it's, you know, it just really keeps it relevant. And we're humans. Like humans, for millennia, have been passing down information among generation, as well as exchanging ideas with each other through stories. And, and to not use that is crazy. To just say, oh, we have a case study in that. I'll send it out to you. Like, no, you're the highly paid account executives who's paid to communicate very well. Tell them about the damn thing. Right.
At least tease the case study, you know, as opposed to I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So we've talked about discovery. Are we into, and so I guess, how do you balance the questions of sort of those discovery questions versus the qualification questions?
Yeah. I mean, I think the discovery questions, first of all, I think everyone should have a list of discovery questions in front of them, even if you've been selling what you're selling for 5 years, because we all know that not every discovery question is relevant every single time to every single company, every single buyer persona. And so I personally got off the phone going, man, I can't believe I missed asking blah. And it's because I didn't follow my own process, right, of having questions there. So, you know, and then it's about we see people just jumping from one pain to another, kind of like a general checkup. And I used the analogy the other day in one of my LinkedIn posts you know, we hear doctor checkup analogies in sales all the time. I used a dentist one because I was at a dentist the other day. And it's like, if they discover that there's a tooth that needs a root canal, but then they're just like, oh, interesting. I know it's causing a pain and da da da, but let's go on to this other thing. It's like, wait, no, but there's this thing here that I thought you could help me with. And it's like, we don't go a level to, you know, deeper or two or three levels deeper. And so we see that being missed. And so I think it's having enough information about the one or two key pains before you move on to your demo.
Love that. And then you can kind of, yeah, you're looking for that tooth that needs the root canal. It's those one or two things.
Yeah.
Perfect. And so we've got to, so we're at the question period. So what happens next here? Because I know no discovery call ever really follows the perfect. It's totally linear, exactly like we talk about. It's always going to be to some element. The customer's always going to try and pull you a little bit here and there. And so I guess sequentially, if we're following the steps, what happens next?
Yeah. So if you're in a more transactional type role and you're then moving on to the demo, or if you're in an enterprise fit or strategic fit role and the demo is two or three calls down the road or the next call, either way, once you get there, it's important to here's a mental model that is a game changer for the folks we coach, and that is, don't think of it as a presentation, think of it as a discussion that's accompanied by a screen share. Right, the minute we hear demo, we feel like it gives us a license to talk for 5 minutes and not take a breath, not check in. Mm-hmm. And so that's number one. Number two, check in every couple minutes, like 1.5 to 2 minutes is our best practice. A lot of reps will just go on for 5 minutes and make it a meaningful check-in. Don't just say, you know, at Replays, we call it meaningful check-ins. Instead of saying, any thoughts on that or any questions, which 9 times out of 10, that's what reps say. That's usually going to generate a, you know, waking them up and going, yeah, no, I'm good. And then they fall back asleep. And as opposed to, you know, you mentioned earlier on when we were talking that you had a demo from XYZ company the other day. And as you know, they're a competitor of ours. This feature I just showed you here, how does that compare to what they have? And this is assuming that we already know the answer and we're somewhat setting up a landmine here, right? And but, you know, asking open-ended questions. We have all sorts of tips for demos. There's one or two though, because I know we're kind of running on time here, but those are one or two key ones.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, are you a open-ended question only? Do you ever look for the no? specifically? I'm thinking like, I'm a huge fan of Never Split the Difference. And yeah. I read that and I was just sort of, I think I read it and then I was covering for one of our AEs for about a month who took off and went to Africa. And I covered sales. And I remember using that and trying to, because I remember the theory is getting a no puts the buyer in the conversation. And so you're intentionally asking questions so they feel like they're empowered to say no. Is this something that's, is this just a weird, like a weird thing that I tried once? Is this something that you've seen replicated across other companies?
I'm a big fan of Chris Voss and his tactics. And I think that's a great one. It works. And, you know, we see other sales methodologies that, not that he's a methodology, but we see sales methodologies that are similar to that, where you try and push them away and see if they lean in. And empowering them with the ability to say no, I think is brilliant. I think it's great. And it, you know, we just have to put ourselves in that frame of mind to answer that question. I certainly feel better when someone is empowering me with the ability first and foremost to say no. So I would say yes. I was on a call the other day and it was with a CEO of a decent sized organization. And I actually said, hey, I'm not sure this is the right fit for you. I really don't. After all the discussion we've had price wise, I just don't know if you're going to feel good about price. I can promise you the value is going to be there. I can promise you the ROI is going to be there. I don't even know if it makes sense for me to show you the price. Should we just pass that by? And he's like, no, show me the price, right? And so that's exactly, and I wasn't using it as a tactic. I was being sincere. I really thought that I was going to waste his time and mine by going into that, but I was wrong. And I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't used that that tactic.
We had one customer that stuck with us for, I want to say like 4.5 years. And that's a long customer. And I remember, I still remember my discovery call with them. And I'm still in touch with them and they're doing great, but they're describing what they do. And I'm like, I genuinely don't think we can help. Like full stop. I'm like, I've no experience. This is with that sort of buyer segment. It's super outside my wheelhouse. We'd only done B2B and this was like B to government at the time. And I'm like, I really don't know. And he's like, well, we think it's going to be the same. And I was like, I want to be honest. I think there's a non-zero chance that this doesn't work at all. And I was like, I'm actively trying to discourage them. They're like, no, we think it'll be fine. We actually think they'll get better response rates. And they were right. And I wasn't, you're just like you, it wasn't a tactic. I was just being genuine. And when I think it's genuinely not a fit, I was voicing that. And it's something I do on almost all of my sales calls. Well, all the ones where I don't think there's a fit, or if I'm not sure about something, I'll voice that. And then they're coming back and they were selling to me and I was like, this feels weird. And just like, I could feel it myself responding to you as soon as you said, it's not even worth showing you the pricing. And I was like, show me the damn pricing, Dave.
Yeah. And I mean, we see, so we're aligned there completely. And we see other great thought leaders like Josh Braun. You know, he recommends that all the time as well in the form of email, right? I'm assuming now that you decide not to move forward with this, you put in the email. And 9 times out of 10, I'll come back and I don't know about 9 times out of 10, but it works, whether it's a talk track or whether it's actually an email.
Totally. I remember that I used to use, my boss told me this a long time ago when I was working in selling like welding. You know, my boss told me to take your, told my boss, you hadn't got back to me. So do you mind if I, you know, take your account out of our system? And that people are like, wait, what? We're in your system? Like so much curiosity. Anyway.
That's right.
I do want to drive towards, because you're right, we don't want to go on forever, as much as I could talk to you about sales and discovery all day. So we've talked quite a bit about discovery. We've had a little bit on the demo. I want to make sure we round it out by just a couple things on the close. And assuming, you know, these could be, you know, different calls or all one and the same call. What's your approach to the close?
Well, the major thing we see people not doing is leaving enough time at the end. You know, they'll get to the last minute, go, oh, I know we're running out of time. Can you go over? And the person says, no. So of course, I always check for time a lot earlier. We didn't get a chance to talk about that. But that's where the impactful, real healthy discussion of next steps happen. And so, you know, I'll just say this. There's a few key things. Number one, leave enough time. Number two, make sure there's a mutually agreed upon action plan. I know that's an overused term, but it's so true. Where there's timelines associated with it, owners, you're following up later in an email saying, you agree to this, I agree to this, can we talk about it next time? Always, always, always you know what I'm going to say, get the next meeting on the books. Mm-hmm. So it's like literally bring up the calendars right then. If you're dealing with someone super senior who maybe their assistant is going to plan their calendar, then at least get agreement that you can reach out to them. But always try and actually get the day, the time booked, and you know, talk about the importance of the fact that of why that meeting should take place. Right? It might just be, hey, let's just get a place over. We find that once you've gone through the decision-making process, our customers really want one last chat on all of the compare and contrast with who's out there. So we'd love to do that with you. And if you don't need it, just cancel it. And then guess what? Most of the time they don't cancel it. And when they see it there, they're like, oh yeah, I had these takeaways. So I get that next meeting on the books, and you know, there's all sorts of stuff in that world, but that we could cover. You're right. But we've, I think, invested a lot of time in the other areas, so we can leave the rest for next time.
Did we just do what you advised us not to do, and that not leave enough time for the close at the end of the call?
That's right. That's what we did. That's okay. It's not a sales call, so we're okay.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of sales call, I know we talked about the cold call role play. One thing that I was interested in that you mentioned earlier, and I know this is sort of, you've got some course materials on this. I know you guys also do, you know, professional call coaching. One element that I think I might change, at least I'll give you the option. You know, I like to give everybody a chance to promote themselves. Obviously, everybody knows you do a call coaching because I haven't shut up about it. But we talked about doing the cold call role play. Would you rather share a customer story blurb? And the only reason I would say this is just so people can hear your format. So it's a little bit of teaser of the material, but it also gets the same point across.
Let's do that. All right. So should I dive into the customer story soundbite then?
Yeah, for sure. And get in there. And if you're listening or if you're on YouTube right now, I'm just throwing Dave's LinkedIn in the chat so you can hit him up there. If you're watching the replay of this on YouTube, you can check it out there. If you are listening on the podcast, I'll make sure we throw in the show notes so you can hit him up. All right.
Okay, great. When you use a customer story, the reality is the best sales reps use it at any point along the sales cycle because it helps build street cred, social credit. And you can do that at the end when you're reaffirming price. You can do it at the beginning when you're talking about discovery, or throughout demo. Our best practice is we see the best reps actually using 3 to 5 customer stories in the course of a 45-minute call. This is surprising to a lot of people. So how do you do it? Well, most people will spend way too long on customer stories if they do it. A lot of people leave it out completely. A lot of people say, I'll send you the case study on that. What we recommend is 1 minute customer story soundbite. You don't need more than that. And really what that is once you hear a pain point, so I guess I'll use it in the context of replays then, if you want me to do an actual role play. You know, if you're like, Dave, I really feel like I just don't get around to call coaching enough. So here's what a customer story soundbite would sound. We talk about the what, the so what, the customer story, all in under a minute. So you say the pain point, which is, I don't have time to do call coaching. That's the pain. What is, you know, we do on-demand call coaching. It's all outsourced. Okay, well, that sounds interesting, but, you know, what is that? So that's the what. It just took me 2 seconds to say. The so what is, and our on-demand call coaching that we do for organizations like Vidyard and Outreach and all across the SaaS community allows us to take our 100 best practices, train your team on it on a consistent basis. And we actually do the call coaching every 3 weeks for your team. So we give you time back in your calendar. The sales reps use a repeatable process that typically gets about 5 to 10% improvement in win rate. Okay, so now we're about 40 seconds in, right? And I've said the so what. So now, told you, you said the pain, I've said what, the so what, which is on-demand call coaching, and here's why you should care. So your ears perk up. Everyone wants to hear why they can improve, how they can improve their win rate. And now I tell you the customer story. And the customer story should have you know, the specific brand, the pain they had when they came to you, as well as what the ROI was. So, you know, this reminds me of the conversation we had with Vidyard. When we first talked to them, they have an amazing team, as you know, of sales leaders there, and they're running at such a fast pace of growth that they're looking to really have someone just augment some of their call coaching. So they threw us in, and fast forward to today, a year later, we call coach every single one of their account executives every 3 weeks, and it's resulted in da 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 da. And we tell them the result, which is significant improvement in win rate, higher average order size, and a scalable, repeatable process. So when they get new reps, it ramps really quickly. Boom! Like that's what we recommend. We've got templates and worksheets and all that kind of stuff that you'll find in the replays masterclass.
How much is the course? Dave, come on! You got to push back on me. That was a setup.
Oh, that was a setup. I love it. Well played.
Awesome. Dave, thank you so much for coming out. If people want to get in touch with you, if they want to hear more about the course, is LinkedIn the best way to reach out?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my email is dave@replays.com. Hit me up there for sure. But I would love to hear from you on LinkedIn. So please shoot me a note, connect with me, and love to meet you. And we share tips on there almost every day.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Dave.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. This was a highlight. Thank you.
Right on, man. Super fun. Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you all next week.